My mother was a music teacher, and but she taught piano, and all of my family plays piano except me, because she had a switch, and if you missed those notes, she'd whack you across your fingers. So I gave that up. I said, not me.
Is it true you were going to be the one person in the family who wasn't a musician? You're going to be a baseball star?
That's right. I was a baseball star. I wasn't going to be one. I was one. Played on a semi-pro team. A guy hit a ball on it, and the ball hit a rock, you know, down in where we played. It wasn't like the major leagues. And it bounced off the rock and hit my pinky finger. And didn't break it, but it swelled it up so big I couldn't play my clarinet.
Wow.
I couldn't close, you know, you got to close the holes on the clarinet. And I said, well, I'm going to give that up because it's messing up my musical career.
Do you remember the first time you started going to clubs and seeing professional jazz musicians play? Was it when you were in the Navy?
I didn't go to clubs. I was in North Carolina. There wasn't no clubs. They had bandstands and barns. They'd take a tobacco barn and take all the tobacco out, put seats in there and put the people in there when the big bands came through. And I used to wait for the big bands to come through.
Mm-hmm. And I guess you started seeing some of the hot shots in Chicago when you went in the Navy, right?
Oh, yeah, when I went to the Navy, I saw everybody. I used to go down to the South Side. Saw Pete Brown and all the Dixieland players back there, Jimmy Noon. And then I went over and saw Gene Ammons.
Oof.
And that did it. Charlie Parker was there that night.
Yeah?
And somebody got him a horn, and he sat in. And once I heard him play, I said, oh, that's the style I want to play right then.
Now, you were playing in a band in North Carolina after the Navy, but what got you to New York City?
What got me to New York City was that the bands came through, like Dizzy and Duke and Lionel Hampton and all those bands, and the people from the college, naturally, they would take us down there because we could get in free. And we'd go down before the musicians start playing and talk to the musicians. And then finally they let us sit in. Mm-hmm. And I played with a couple of bands. And they said, man, you should be in New York. You know, you got a business down here, you know. And so I got to thinking about it. And eventually I changed my mind and came on into New York.
Now, you got there right around 1950. Bebop was happening. And I wonder how long it took for you to catch on with the players there.
Oh, I already played bebop. I did that in the Navy.
Uh-huh.
Once I heard Charlie Parker in the Navy, that did it. I was a bebop player. Didn't take me any time to catch up because I was at 59th and Broadway. I went to a school at the Darrow Institute of Music.
Right.
It was the GI school. And I went there so I could get that $125 a month, you know. And I didn't have to worry about a gig.
You were playing with a lot of great guys like Elmo Hope and Percy Heath and Philly Joe Jones, and then with Horace Silver and Clifford Brown specifically. I wonder if you could tell right away there was something special about Clifford Brown.
Oh, yeah, of course. Right away, I would have played the job for no money.
Yeah.
He was great. But he, you know, most of those guys got that style from Dizzy. Mm-hmm. Actually, Clifford got his from Fats Navarro.
Right.
That's who he plays like. He doesn't play like Dizzy. He plays like Fats Navarro. And just like a more rounded, complete trumpet style, you know. See, Dizzy was like a specialist, you know.
You were a pretty big name in New York in the mid-50s, but you didn't start making records till later. You went on the road. And I wonder if touring around and playing a lot of live dates affected the way your sound developed.
Oh, actually it did, because see, what I would do, I would play around and watch the reaction of the people. And whatever they liked, that's what I recorded. And that was a perfect formula. Just about everything I put out had some kind of sales, you know.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed your late 50s stuff. A lot of that music, Blues Walk and some other albums, were done with Herman Foster. Can you talk a little bit about Herman Foster? I don't think he was as well known as he maybe should be.
He was well known, but see, he played like George Shearing, and they wasn't gonna build him up, because he was a powerful piano player. He was a music genius. Sometimes I played for years and never even called a tune. I just started playing it. and he'd pick it up after one or two bars.
Once you started getting into the 60s, there was a lot more work with Hammond organ groups. Did that, playing with more organ groups, does that start on the road?
Really, the organ groups started because we used to travel all over the country.
Right.
And some places didn't have a piano. And we couldn't rent a piano because a piano costs over $1,000 to rent, and the job wasn't paying about $400.
Right.
With the organ, you don't have an extra man to pay because you got a bass and piano right there with one instrument.
A lot of folks around the time were getting caught up with drugs, and that set you apart. You were not into that scene at all. And I wonder if you felt like that affected your career at all. Did that slow you down?
It probably did, because they did things with people like that because they were more exploitable.
Oh, right.
Which, if I'd have been a businessman, I'd probably have done the same thing.
Yeah.
How are you going to not want 100% profit? Because they could tell them anything. They come down to the office, want to borrow some money, they give them $50 and put $200 on the book. They couldn't remember.
Right, right. One of my favorite albums of yours, and I'm not alone, the Alligator Boogaloo record. And you're working with George Benson. He was still just a young kid in his mid-20s. And Dr. Lonnie Smith, who was also just starting out. Melvin Lasty.
His big hit was with a religious group. And I heard that, and I liked his feeling. So I said, I have to record this guy.
And Leo Morris, who was Idris Muhammad later.
Idris Muhammad.
Terrific, terrific drummer. You've worked with a lot of great drummers, and I wonder how important rhythm is for you in music.
100%. That's the key to the band. Key to the band is rhythm. Key to music is rhythm, not only the band, rhythm. Well, it developed for working in the ghetto clubs. Because, see, in the ghetto clubs, if you didn't play music, that made them pat their feet and dance. Somebody else had a job the next week.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn how to do that.